Robert Orr sat at the mirror and shuffled through his faces. Bones needed to be shifted slightly at times, but it was mainly about skin, nerves, tendons, and cartilage. And as his features changed, he altered the colour and shape of his eyes, too. All he felt now was a characteristic tingling. There was no discomfort anymore, as there had been when he first discovered his ability. He'd adopted the discipline of rotating through faces daily because he'd found his power was like a muscle. It needed to be used. It developed and improved through use. He transitioned through the faces in a standard order, Mick to Keith to Ronnie to Charlie to Bill. He'd used the appearances of the mid-1970s Rolling Stones as a basis for his five main faces, although he'd modified each to prevent them from being obvious copies. It was not just that he liked the Stones, at least pre-1980, but he'd found that they were so embedded into the British psyche, even a hint of their semblance engendered a kind of goodwill with the average person. There was something familiar about them, something reassuring, something cool. He'd used that endlessly, in all manner of ways. People often commented that he looked like a young Mick Jagger. "I gather no moss," he would say, as his own little joke to himself. He developed the faces when he'd started his second life, 10 years ago, and they'd served him well. He had others, of course, but the Stones represented the main ones he showed to the outside world, and they'd been a key element in his rapid rise as a political journalist. It was amazing what people would tell you when you could tailor your face to their disposition. He settled momentarily on his oldest face, his real face. His born face. He didn't use it much anymore, and looking at it, at himself, made him wistful. But then he shrugged. Appearances were superficial, especially for a thief of faces. He discovered his power in his teens. It just manifested. He'd done nothing to earn it. It was a gift, as his sister Katie had once said, and she had gifts of her own. He moved back to Mick, the face he wore most of the time, the face the world knew as Robert Barker. Satisfied with the integrity of his looks, he started to shave. He hadn't used a razor for years. He merely ran his fingers over his jaw and willed the hair growth to fall away. He wiped away the residue and went into the bedroom to get dressed. The slim-cut suit and leather trainers were Tom Ford, the shirt Paul Smith, the tie, Gucci. The aftershave was something new and Spanish that a promoter had given him recently. He spent a few minutes in front of the mirror making sartorial and physical adjustments, then made a final check that his hair was just the right kind of dishevelled. He collected his keys, cigarettes, lighter, and phone, and left the flat. The black cab dropped him off just over Westminster Bridge, across the road from the Houses of Parliament. And he immediately lit a cigarette, offering a second to Addy as he approached. "Cheers," Addy nodded, positioning his legs protectively around his camera gear. "Wonder what's on the agenda today," said Rob, as if musing. Addy looked around as Rob lit his cigarette. "Something big, the whole gang's here." He was right. Rob glanced around the edges of Parliament Square and noted every major political broadcaster, all hungry for the story. The journo pack. Ruthless media sharks. His people. Of course, unlike all the rest, Rob already knew what was being announced.
"Looks like," Rob murmured.
"Must be to do with Claremont," Addy said. Rob nodded. It wasn't.